Welcome to the Elementary Librarian Podcast, where we discuss simple tips and tricks to help you take your school library to the next level. And now your host, Jocelyn Sam.
Welcome, Elementary Librarian listeners. Today, I'm very excited to have a special guest, Tiffany Whitehead, from the blog MightyLittleLibrarian.com. She's here to talk to us today about genrefication in the school library. Welcome, Tiffany.
Hi, I'm so excited to be here.
Great. I have been wanting to talk to you for some time now. I have written to you several times in the past about things that I've seen on your blog and just different ideas that you've had that you've put out there on Twitter. And a few weeks ago, I put out a tweet saying, hey, I'm looking for somebody to talk to about genrefying. And I reached out to Tiffany and she agreed to talk to me about it. So I'm really excited to have her here today. Tiffany, tell us a little bit about you, about your blog, and does anything else you'd like for us to know?
I am a librarian at a middle school in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. I have about 950 6th, 7th, and 8th grade students at my school, and I've been blogging for several years now. I actually started my blog, Mighty Little Librarian, when I was a librarian at an elementary school, at a 2nd and 3rd grade school. And I've been at the middle school for about 3 years now.
Okay. So you definitely have some elementary experience to share with us, and we're happy about that. But I still think that even being at the middle school level, your ideas and things that you write about are still very relevant to us. Let's talk a little bit about genrefication for people who maybe don't know a whole lot about it. It is sort of a newer thing in the scale of school libraries, I believe. I learned about genrefication at some conferences that I've been to in my state. Tell us a little bit about what it is and why did you consider it for your library?
So different people have different levels of genrefication in their libraries. And genrefication is just rearranging your library based on genres. Some people just genrefy their fiction, some people just genrefy their nonfiction, and some people do both. In my library, we've done both. I started with my fiction section, and I have about 8 different genres that my fiction books are categorized in. And then my nonfiction section, I have about 23, I believe, nonfiction categories that they're organized in. So instead of the traditional Dewey Decimal System, all of my books are grouped together by categories, and then some of them are broken down into subcategories.
Some people call it the bookstore layout, too.
Yes. It's very similar to a bookstore layout in that it's very, very convenient for browsing. And so many of my students don't use our library catalog very much because our library is so browser-friendly.
Right. And so when you learned about genrefication, did you adopt it immediately? What got you really interested in doing it in your library?
It was really kind of an organic process for me. I started the process 3 years ago when I first got into the middle school library. And at that time, I wasn't aware of too many people who were genrefying their libraries around that time. But there were a couple out there who I could pull some ideas from. But I started by just tagging my fiction books into genre categories because, you know, when my students come in, they would always say, oh, Miss Whitehead, I'm looking for a sports book or I'm looking for a romance book. And so I thought, well, if I go and tag all of our books by genre, then it would be a lot easier for my students to come in and find what they're looking for. So I actually used some tinted spine labels that I got from Dimco, and I just assigned colors to different genres. I came up with my list. It was originally 6 genres that I wanted to use, and I just started working through my collection. And at that time, I was doing some very intense weeding. I inherited a library with a collection that was very, very aged. So I was going book by book anyway. And as I was going through these books and weeding, I just started tagging them along the way. And once I finished my entire fiction section with the weeding and with tagging them with their colored stickers, I looked at the shelves and I said, you know, why wouldn't I pull these apart? Why wouldn't I separate them? And so that's kind of how it came about for me. At that time, I had already tagged and separated my series books because middle school students are very into series. And a lot of them, it's important that they read them in a particular order. So I had put some bright orange dots on the top of all of our series books and numbered them so that the students could find them easily. And then I just pulled them out. And so I had already had a section that was separated. And that wasn't working for us too well because it was all different genres. But once I kind of saw the way and thought, oh, let me pull these books and separate them. And once I did that, I found that the students absolutely loved it.
Right, right. That's what I've been reading about a lot lately. And I've actually separated my series out as well, which I have found is a lot easier for students who want to read those books. Because before, in my library, the fiction books were by just the first letter of the author's last name. And so it was just kind of a big mess of, you know, all the series books would just be mixed in with the other books. And so me being a person of order, I didn't really like that. It's just what I inherited when I came there. So, you know, that was my first step. And I've actually written a blog post about this in the past about, actually it's called Why I Won't Ditch Dewey. And this is a very controversial subject. And, you know, there's people who feel very strongly about it both ways. I sort of sit in the middle of the road. And, you know, it's not that I'm that in love with the Dewey Decimal Classification System. But it's, for me, it's more of a factor of having time to relabel everything and, you know, update the catalog. So on that note, tell us a little bit about what is involved in the process of genrefying your collection. I know that there are several steps that you have to do. Tell us about what you did. And I know that you've written a series of blog posts about this as well, which I will link to in the show notes.
I did. I wrote that series because I get a lot of questions, and there are lots of very specific questions about the steps that I took. And I tend to just kind of throw myself into a project without necessarily thinking it through. So there are definitely some things that I learned along the way that others can learn from. But definitely the first thing you have to do is sit down and decide your categories. What categories are you going to use? Whether you're working with fiction or nonfiction. And then you have to decide how you're going to tag them or label them. And for me, I'm a very visual person, so that's really one of the great strengths with the genrefication process, because when my students or when I look at my shelves, it's very obvious what books are together because of their labeling and their tagging. And it's also very obvious when a book is not where it belongs. So labeling is an important step in the process. And then, of course, the changing in the catalog, that was one of the more challenging steps for me. So my blog post on that definitely shares some things that I learned along the way. But, you know, obviously you have to make changes in your catalog so that you can find books. And it was a challenge because I probably spent about a year and a half from start to finish with both fiction and nonfiction. That's completely weeding and genrefying my entire collection. But that was a long time to spend kind of in limbo. And, you know, a book would say one thing in the catalog, but where it was located didn't necessarily correlate with that. So that's definitely a challenge of the genrefication process.
Definitely. I love your post. You have given people examples of your categories, and you've also included signage and stuff like that, right?
I have, yes. And all of my signage is Creative Commons. They are using pictures and things that I created that were public domain. And even if you're not, you know, diving into the genrefication process, you could still associate those different signs with different Dewey categories. And I really like that there's a consistency and it's very visual.
Absolutely. I thought that was a great idea. And Tiffany's put her time in and just, you know, put this out there on her blog. And so we're very appreciative of that. Anything that can save us a little bit of work is fantastic. So I know that a lot of times that genderification is controversial because, you know, there are some people who just love the system that exists. And, you know, there's some argument that that system has existed for a long time and it has served us for a long time. And, you know, I can see that side of it. But I think the main thing that keeps a lot of people from doing genderification would be the timing. For me and many others that operate on a fixed schedule that have classes pretty much all day long, every day, you know, the thought of redoing everything is a little bit daunting. So, you know, do you have any ideas for people who have that situation of how they can maybe get started with this?
It is a process that takes quite a bit of time. My biggest suggestion would be to recruit some really great volunteers, whether it's some teachers that are willing to work with you on this or some parent volunteers. Someone that's going to stick with you and kind of support you throughout the process. I was very lucky to have a grandparent volunteer who's a retired teacher, and she came in and she bought into the process, which was very important. And then I could not have genderified the library without her. In my library, I am the only librarian. I don't have an aide. I have 900 students. I'm on a fixed schedule. So I have some flexibility in my time, but I am seeing classes regularly. So finding that time just to be able to work on this project for large chunks of time was very difficult. But having that volunteer, I mean, she pretty much changed all of the books in the catalog, which was definitely the most time-consuming step in the process. So getting a good volunteer or two that will be committed to coming in regularly and helping you along the way is definitely essential.
Yeah, I would say so for sure. And that's great that you were able to find someone who, you know, it kind of takes a special volunteer to do that, to allow them to just get in the catalog and start changing things. But I'm glad that you were able to find somebody to do that. And they are out there. In fact, I just did a podcast a couple of days ago, or just aired a few days ago, about finding volunteers in the library. And I will post a link to that as well. But it's definitely important to find somebody who can help you, because this is not a process that you can just undertake all by yourself. One of my favorite things from your blog in this genderification project was the picture of you like laying over the table. That was pretty awesome.
Yes, that was my moment of breakdown. And I've received many emails from people who are working their way through the genderification process, and we all have that moment where we stop and we think, oh my God, what am I doing?
Was this really worth it?
This library is a mess. Yes. I get people that send me that, and they're like, oh my gosh, everything is everywhere. I don't know what I'm doing. Please tell me that this is worth it. And it absolutely is. I would go through twice as much work just to get the same result, because it's absolutely worth it. My students love the way that our library is organized. In fact, when I ask them, you know, what's your favorite thing about our library, many of them say the way that our books are organized. And I really see it when we get new students who come in. And I always have one of our students kind of give a tour to our new incoming students. And it's always really fun to watch them realize, oh, these books are arranged by genre. And so I know that I really like to read mysteries, and they're all right here together. This is my section. So I find that our students really take ownership of the library because of the genrefication.
Right. I like that. That was one of the questions I was going to ask you also, is what benefits have you seen from the process? Have you noticed, you talked about, you know, the students are really loving it. Have you noticed any reaction from the staff, the administration?
Yes, actually, my best friend is an ELA teacher here at the same school. And when I first came up with the idea and told her that this is what I wanted to do, she was very against it. She did not think this was a good idea. You know, she wanted the library to stay arranged as it was. She thought that the students would have a harder time finding things. But now that we've done it and that you can see it in action, She absolutely loves it and tells other teachers and librarians when she talks to them how great our library is because of how it's arranged. Something really cool that I was able to do, because I've genrefied both fiction and nonfiction, I'm able to pair our fiction and nonfiction similar type books together. For example, our sports fiction and our sports nonfiction are all arranged right next to each other. So if a student is into sports, they can go to that section and they know that all of our sports books are there. The same with historical fiction and our history and war nonfiction books. They're all right in the same area. So it's a really good common core tie-in for us. I find that my students are much more likely to grab a nonfiction book on the same topic that they're reading a novel on if they're right there. And before, the way our library was arranged, most of our students never even ventured into the nonfiction section unless they were doing research for a project.
Yes, I can see that could be a major benefit as far as your nonfiction circulations, just increasing those. What do you do if maybe you have a book that doesn't fit into any of your categories? Have you had that situation?
Yes, and that's probably one of the questions that I get asked the most about this. And the beauty for me of genrefication is that you can keep changing it. But when I was going through my books and I would come to one and I realized it could fit into multiple categories, instead of thinking of the technicalities of that particular genre, I would try and think of it more in terms of what type of reader would be most likely to enjoy this book. So if it were, say, a historical novel that had some romance in it, and I knew that it would really appeal to my romance readers more, and it would be more likely to be checked out in that area, then that's the genre that I would go with. Also, sometimes I would have multiple copies, and I would put them in different genre sections so that they would be in both places.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. We talked about the benefits and kind of how the whole procedure works. What has been the most challenging thing? I mean, aside from just the time it takes to do it, what have been some challenges that you've faced?
I mean, the most challenging thing was getting through the process. I really haven't found anything that I could possibly say that I dislike about it. For most of our students, they absolutely love it. I gave a survey of my students about a whole range of library topics back in January, and one of the questions was about the way that our library is arranged. And an overwhelming percentage of the students said either that they absolutely love the way that our library is arranged or they like it better than other libraries that they've been to, which for me was very gratifying and very confirming in the fact that this is the right thing for us. It's a little challenging that I am the only school in my district that's done this, and this is a concern that a lot of people have as far as, you know, teaching library skills and being consistent across, you know, across the grades or across the school district. But I find that what I'm trying to accomplish the most is that I want my students to be readers. I want my middle school students to develop that internal love for reading that's going to last for the rest of their lives. And if I can do that by helping them find books much more easily, then that's a win for me. And so that's really kind of the driving force between genrefication for us.
I can definitely see what you mean. And I think that that's a big argument a lot of times that people have. You know, they'll say, well, if I don't teach my students to use the library catalog at my school, then they won't know how to use it in the future, you know, maybe at a college or university or something like that. And, you know, I can kind of understand that, but I think it goes back to what you just said. What is best for my students? And who knows what a college library is going to look like in 10 years? Who knows what it's going to look like in 5 years, you know?
And I'm still teaching them library skills. You know, I still show them how to use the catalog. We're still learning research skills. And I'm really able to spend a lot of my time working with the students at a deeper level instead of just saying, you know, oh, you're looking for this book. Let's see if we can find it. Okay, it's going to be in, you know, the 800s. Instead, I can have deeper conversations with the students about, you know, digital citizenship, about research, about books that they're reading that they're really enjoying. Because when they come to the library to find a book, it's not overwhelming. It's not a hassle. It's not stressful for them. They're just able to come in and browse.
Yes, and for me, it seems like no matter how many times I show them how to find the book, they still don't get it.
Absolutely.
And so, you know, as I read more and more about it and I talk to more people, I mean, I really just start leaning more that way. If somebody is interested in the benefits of genrefication, but maybe they just cannot make it work for whatever reason right now, do you have any other suggestions for them to make their school library more user-friendly?
I think that displays are a really great way to kind of reap some of the benefits of genrefication without throwing yourself into the process. There are so many great ideas out there with genre displays that you can do, and students are always, you know, when they come in or when they're looking for a book, they're thinking of a genre. And if you can associate that word genre with them, that's really a benefit as well as far as the curriculum goes. But I think displays, rotating them out, exposing students to different genres and different types of books that maybe they wouldn't go and seek out on their own is a really great way to kind of incorporate this without throwing yourself in completely.
Yes, that was going to be my suggestion as well. I had a podcast a while back on library displays with Jennifer Underhill. Excellent podcast. If you have not checked that one out, I highly recommend that one. She had some really great ideas of some very simple and cost-effective things that you can do to make your library more interesting. And I think that if you're not going to go all in with genrefying, I mean, the least that we can do as librarians is to maybe do some creative signage. That's the very least. And then have some type of rotating display, like you were saying. I mean, I totally agree with that. And I think that that will increase, especially your nonfiction circulations, even just by doing that.
Oh, definitely.
Well, Tiffany, this has been some really awesome information. Oh, and I was going to mention, I do have a Pinterest board that's called School Library Displays, and also I think I have one called Library Bulletin Boards. I will link to those in the show notes for anybody who's interested. I try to get on Pinterest quite often and seek out things like that for my listeners. Do you have anything like that on yours, Tiffany?
I do, and I also have a Pinterest board that links to all of my resources on genrefication.
Okay, that's great. I will include the links to both of those on the show notes. If people have any questions about anything that we discussed today, how would you recommend they reach you?
You can reach me on Twitter. I am at librarian_tiff. Or by email, you can get in touch with me. I'm librariantiff@gmail.com.
Okay, that sounds great. And also, I wanted to congratulate you just quickly for being one of the 2014 Library Journal Movers and Shakers. That is an awesome, awesome award to have. And so congratulations on that.
Thank you. I'm very honored to be included in that group.
Yes, that is just outstanding. And I actually I just talked to another one of those honorees, Ms. Shannon Miller, a few days ago. And so that podcast will be airing soon also. So I'm just so excited to be able to talk to such amazing librarians and just for you guys to be able to share your ideas with other people out there.
Yes, Shannon is awesome.
Okay. Well, Tiffany, thanks again for your time, for sharing about genrefication with us, and I wish you a lot of success in the rest of the school year.
Thank you. You too.
I hope that y'all enjoyed the genrefication discussion with Tiffany Whitehead as much as I did talking about it. It was a lot of fun. I would love to know your thoughts on genrefication. Is this something you have done or would consider doing? Let us know, yes or no, in the comments and why. We would love to hear from you just to get some different perspectives on this very controversial issue. I also wanted to let you guys know about a contest that's coming up. It's going to be a video testimonial contest for my library lesson plans, and I'm going to be giving away several copies of the new upcoming 2014-2015 library lesson plans to some people who create those video testimonials for me. There will be much more details coming out about this very soon on the blog, so just keep an eye out for that. If you want to check out today's show notes, just go to elementarylibrarian.com/podcast17, and you can find all of the links that we discussed today on there. Also, be looking forward to my upcoming podcast with the gals from awfullibrarybooks.net. You will love it. They are a lot of fun, and we're going to be talking about weeding. So be on the lookout for in 2 weeks. I will be airing that podcast. Again, thank you so much for listening. You guys are awesome, and I hope that you have a great day.
For listening to the Elementary Librarian Podcast, brought to you by ElementaryLibrarian.com.